Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Behind the Racket Pod, the podcast taking you behind the racket with today's top tennis players and biggest issues facing the sport.
Behind the Racket is a community to give fans and players in the world of tennis the opportunity to open up like they have never done before.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. It can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Pandora, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com.
Special thanks to my sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at NewBalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at #NBGivesBack.
You can also help support the podcast by visiting patreon.com/behindtheracketpod and receive rewards from our travels around the world. And now.
Well, the man who has become a folk hero in Scotland over the last 48 hours is joining us here on the podcast, Noah Rubin, hero to many and foe to me. How are you, buddy?
This is not real. I'm okay.
I know. That's what I kept saying to myself. So let me just, first off, welcome everybody to the podcast. It's good to talk to you. Let me set the stage here. We obviously did a podcast, was that a week and a half ago, that we had Taylor Townsend on. Mm-hmm. We had not done a podcast for a few weeks before that. We even got a checkup note from somebody at the Tennis Channel Podcast Network saying, hey, is everything all right? And I'm like, well, turns out that Noah got the COVID.
I got the mid.
Noah, unfortunately, was one of the breakthrough cases, so missed some time with that. We do Taylor Townsend stuff. I go to Cincinnati, have this incredible week of catching up with all of these incredible players and friends from years past. And then Noah's just like, well, it looks like I'm going to Winston-Salem because I didn't get into the U.S. Open qualies. So all of a sudden, there's Noah. And, you know, I'm paying attention, and I'm really excited for my good friend because he won a tennis match on Saturday. And I don't mean that to come across as any like that. I am genuinely totally proud of you for all the hard work. To be able to win a tennis match was a big effing deal. I was just like, I don't care what happens against Luca Pui. Noah's done something I didn't know that I'd ever get to see him do again. He won a tennis match, a professional tennis match. So well done. Loses a match, does Noah, against Luca Pui, in a match in which you did have, you served for the match, you had a match point, heartbreaking loss, and I'm sitting there watching my phone, and I'm just like, I'm going to still send him this note because he, what an incredible comeback he's had this year from some real depths. And then all hell breaks loose, and I'm receiving like 18 different messages while trying to watch the new movie Vivo starring Lin-Manuel Miranda. And I'm having to answer like 18 different questions of, why is Noah playing Andy Murray? I don't know. Let's hear it from the man himself.
Okay. Oh, that was a lot. Even to hear it from an outsider of what my life was like the past 2 weeks. Thank you for the compliments. And anybody new listening to this show, you'll know when he's shitting on my life. It's pretty self-explanatory standard. So when he actually says he's serious, he is serious. So I do appreciate the text messages you sent to me. Meant a lot. Let's go back to Atlanta quickly.
Okay.
So I was happy enough to see you in North Carolina, the tournament prior in Cary, where I lost to Maxime Cressy. But, you know, that was I guess my own internal comeback tour. Like you said, I've worked fairly hard the past few months to get into mental state of mind and some physical shape, which is still on the rise right now. But to actually put myself in a position that I want to play tennis again and I want to compete, because if you look back at the other one or two matches I played this year, it did not look like I wanted to be out on that court. I think Mike Cation can agree to that.
Well, you and last year in November
yes,
was
yeah, that was just embarrassing.
It was.
Yeah. No, I mean,
it was hard. It was hard to watch.
Yeah, it was more sad than anything else. I mean, it was sad to be out there, you know, feeling that way. So here I am, kind of making a comeback. I have Cary, where I'm feeling good, getting into it. And then I go to Atlanta. Had some success there in years past, and I'm like, okay, here we go. We're ready for it. I go up a set against Donskoy. It's hot out there. Things started slowing down a little bit for me, and I'm like, okay, it's hot, but it's, you know, hang in. And then kind of throughout that match, I started feeling worse, started getting some chills, you know, thought heat stroke was coming on. I was like, okay, you know, maybe I'm not in great shape, maybe I'm not ready, but I thought it was in okay shape, and tried to get back into the match, lost 6-4 in the third. It was a tough one. That one hurt a lot because I did feel prepared. You know, get on a plane back home the next day. How excited my girlfriend was to come home for a vacation in New York for 2 weeks. And she comes. I'm like, oh, I think I have a fever and some chills again. Get tested, test positive for COVID. Here I am, breakthrough case, actually having symptoms. So I'm like, oh, good. This is fun. 2 weeks quarantine at home. I'm sorry, Jamie. That's my girlfriend. I ruined her whole vacation, the only one she has for the next 6 months.
You've been ruining her life for a few years.
Right, so. But this is kind of, in a nutshell, I think this is summarizing our relationship. So,
yeah.
That was a tough little setback there, you know, to be one of those breakthrough cases, to actually have symptoms at our age as well with being vaccinated. So, you know, lost taste and smell, move on. You know, then we're approaching the U.S. Open, New York time. You know, we're here. I'm getting back into it. You know, obviously, since I haven't played, my rankings dropped a bit. I'm around 300 right now. But did think that a wild card opportunity was definitely possible.
Which is why we didn't talk about it on the podcast.
Right. We didn't want that to deter and to show people that I wasn't, you know, training or working out, because I was doing as much as possible. I felt good coming back. But obviously, the USA didn't care about that, so we should have told them anyway. We then looked at the wild cards, did not get into the qualifying. Also found out that I was not the first qualifying alternate. Banerjee, if I'm pronouncing his last name correctly, was the one that got in over me. For a blow like that, after everything, you know, we look at some of the wild cards for men's and women's, and I think it was a fun game of darts that the USA played. But, you know, I think for me to not play the Open for the first time in a few years, it was tough. I mean, for a comeback road like I had, I would have loved to be out there. But that opened the door kind of for Winston-Salem to kind of play in front of a crowd that I'm familiar with, wasn't a part of for too many years, specifically 1 year, but, you know, it was fun to be out there and, you know, played in qualies. And for me, it's kind of every match counts. You know, every match is a battle right now to say, hey, you know, are you in that right frame of mind? Are you ready to compete? Are you ready to play? And, you know, to play JC, who, you know, has been having some struggles, you know, winning-wise on the court as well, I think this was an important match for both of us. And, you know, it was a tough second set for me, but to come out and compete and play and get that first win since March 2020, right before the pandemic, it means a lot. I mean, you know, we were talking right after it, and I was a bit emotional, to be honest. I mean, you know, we've spoken about it in the podcast, we've spoken about it before, but it's been a long journey to get back here. You know, a lot of people around me in my close circle, whether it's friends, family, girlfriend, yourself, you know, trying to get me through these moments and saying, hey, you know, do you still want this? Do you want to still be on the court? And to get that win like I did, and it was really emotional. You know, it really was. It took some time to kind of get through that and say, hey, you know, we're in a tournament. You want to win this tournament, you know, as funny as that sounds, but, you know, let's move forward. And then the Lucas Pui match came, you know, that was my final round qualifying. playing some good tennis. You know, again, here's another one. You know, Lucas has been struggling a bit as well, coming back from his injury last year. Mm-hmm. He was actually my last win that I had pre-pandemic, right before, and then I lost to Steve Johnson at Indian Wells Challenger. And yeah, it's tough. I mean, in retrospect, I went back to him and I was like, I can't believe you made that fucking lob in the court. We couldn't make a lob in the court. Like, the ball flies at Winston a little bit, so you put it up, it goes to the fence. But here I am at a set 5-4, 40-30 on my serve, pretty good approach shot to his backhand, and he lobs me on the baseline. And, you know, it is what it is. You know, we went through it. We were fighting. It was a good battle. Heartbreaking. Would have loved to kind of get through that one. And here's where, quote-unquote, in my case, all hell breaks loose. So we'll go through each step of this. We don't want to miss anything. And I want you to interrupt with any questions or if I don't explain something correctly, okay?
Okay.
I walk off the court, tired, exhausted. My Tony Bresky, coach at Wake Forest, who was there when I was there, he said there are two lucky loser spots just keep an eye out for, you know, something to think about. I said, okay, you know, once, and for people that don't know, and honestly, I don't really know it that well, but once there are two spots open, since there are four lucky loser options, all four players go into a hat. I believe if there's one, it's the top two ranked players that go into a hat, if I'm not mistaken. Does that sound about right?
I think that sounds right.
So when there's two, all four players or losers of that day go into a hat. We knew one of them to be Nick, who pulled out against Murray. And here we are, we're, you know, ATP is kind of like frantic. Like, I'm looking at them. Right. I'm like kind of like exhausted downstairs. They're like, we don't know what's happening yet. We're looking at it.
Right. Because, it should, again, if you didn't know, if you haven't heard, Nick Kyrgios and Andy Murray were scheduled to play, I believe, 8 o'clock Eastern out there, or 7 o'clock Eastern out there. They were scheduled to play about half an hour from when Noah's recounting this moment.
Yes. So, you know, I go back upstairs, moving around, and then I'm close to Pierre Puegas Herbert and Max Purcell, who were two other losers. I heard, again, retrospectively, that Pierre was not feeling well during his qualifying final round, so he was a possible no. And side note as well, when they pick out these numbers, Watsonuki was number one. He already knew he was going to play the following day, so that's out. Pierre knew that he was the next one in at number two, and he figured that he was going to get in the next day, and he wasn't feeling so well, so he said, I'm going to push until tomorrow. I'm sitting next to Purcell thinking he's going to take this spot for Murray right now. He's been off the court, you know, for some time. I'm like, okay, you know, it's tough. You know, I never get this luck, you know, obviously thinking that, and you get what you wish for. And Max said no. And I turn around. I'm like, what?
I've never heard of anybody saying no.
So we have two no's now. So we have Pierre no, somewhat understandable. Max no, which I didn't hear if anything was wrong or not, or he was just assuming, or he knew things that we didn't know kind of thing, like a Millman.
Yeah, because he ended up getting in.
Right, he got in. So, and all the lucky losers are in the second round right now. Watsonuki won his match, and Pierre and Max got byes, taking a seed spot. So here I am. The guy looks at me. One of the ATP managers looks at me. He's like, do you want to play? I was like, now? Like, are we going on the court now? He's like, you have 15 minutes. I was like, man, like, I can't even – do I have an hour? Like, I'm – you know, this is kind of where – and I was talking to Vashik about this later. This is where I felt lost for the first time. I don't feel lost too often. I didn't have a support system to say, hey, this is what you can do. This is what's in the rule book. This is what you're able to do. I was like, I need to shower and see a physio quickly. Like, I need at least a half hour. I didn't – like, they're putting the pressure on me, which I get. There's fans out there. There's TV running. But this is where that – is like, you know, am I just a number? You know, am I just trying to get out there? And that's where I felt like I couldn't, even for somebody that thinks as much as I do, I couldn't process thought at that point.
So let me ask the questions here. What happens, or do you know what happens if you had said, I'm not available?
Yes. So they go through all the lucky loser spots. That even includes the first round lucky losers. So there would have most likely been... I know Nava, since he plays at Wake Forest, would have been there if they really needed him, I guess. But if, let's say, hypothetically, they went through and there's no lucky losers left, Murray would have got a walkover.
Okay.
So
And this is a pretty unique situation, because normally what will happen is there will be the qualifiers and then a period of time before the first round starts. Essentially, it doesn't normally happen that there's a qualifier and then within 30 minutes you have to have somebody available ready in case there's a withdrawal. That just doesn't happen very often.
Right. Scheduling wise, it's tough to find.
Correct. Normally, you would have qualifying finish on a Sunday, first round start on a Monday. It's a much more simple process.
Right. But given the scheduling prior to the US Open, they're trying to kind of cram it a little bit more so there's more time in between the events. But the one rule that was irrational to me was that if Murray, since for people that don't know, you know, once the qualifier spots and the lucky loser spots are there, they are randomly selected. So Murray could have gotten a qualifier or a lucky loser. It was either or. If he got a qualifier, his match would have been pushed till tomorrow.
Wow.
But if it's a lucky loser, he has to play that day. So that's where the common sense for me wasn't grabbing at it. If you can think about it for a second.
Who are you supposed to call and reach out to if you have a question or dilemma in that moment?
I don't know. I mean, do I text Denis Zivkovic real quick? You know, something like that. Yeah,
but that's a player representative.
Right, yeah, I don't know. And that's where the feeling of being lost. I was like, of course I want this opportunity. It's Murray, I'm playing, it's now, and I don't think I'll be able to get into the tournament, which I don't think anybody else pulled out. I'm not even sure. But I was lost. I didn't know what my options looked like. And that's kind of where this whole player association, I understand it because who is there for me?
Did they offer you anything in terms of like you saying, hey, I need to see the physio, et cetera, and they would say, here's X amount of time, or here is some money, or here is some food, or you know, anything to make sure that you were able to play that night?
The people that I felt were most for me were the physios and the trainers there. They were like, what can we do for you kind of thing. There was a physician on site that was, you know, getting the Gator lights and, you know, the trainers giving the pickle juice, you know, kind of a shot of it and everything else. And, you know, no, it was ATP came back and said, okay, we managed to get you 7:45, which at that point was 30, 35 minutes, I believe, right after my match. Mm. So I showered quickly while, you know, everybody was saying like, what the fuck is going on? Like, what are you doing?
Right.
And then in the training room with Nick, who's getting his knee wrapped or whatever, and the trainer's working on me, and as I'm, you know, wincing and I'm putting down bananas and pickle juice or whatever else. But no, at 7:45, you know, there was an ATP member downstairs saying, you ready to go? So
why wouldn't they give you 8:15? If for just to, again, go behind the curtain here, when there is a player who's going to be playing singles and doubles in the same day, typically if the player asks for it, especially if it's been a two-hour match like Noah had, they will give about 90 minutes. That is typically the standard operating procedure, that you'll be given 90 minutes from the conclusion of your singles to the start of doubles. You went – do you know what the exact time was?
I believe it was 35 minutes.
From off court into on court, 35 minutes.
I'm pretty sure I can
give or take,
yeah.
That's nuts, man. Like, I know it's a huge opportunity, don't get me wrong.
Right.
Like, and I know you, especially with the fact that you went to school there and you have a massive audience there who's looking for somebody to, you know, essentially at that moment, no disrespect, but be the victim for Andy Murray, right?
No, of course. Like, I was not.
I mean,
this is for somebody as competitive as me that wants to play the best in the world and kick their asses. You know, that's why I get on court. So like everybody's saying it's an experience, of course. And then this is a story, of course. But I want to play. I want to be out there competing. So the fact that I went on court pretty certain I was going to lose that match. You know, I don't think I've ever been on court like that before. I've never been out there saying, what's the best I can do right now? How do I not full body cramp? How do I put on a show? How do people enjoy this? How do I make jokes? You know, I was disappointing myself in how I operated during that time off and not asking more questions. But, you know, I think that's a little bit too hard on myself. And this is where it comes and says, we need somebody there for the player to say, hey, this is not okay. You know, he needs an hour. He needs, you know, and this is where it was like, okay, there's TV running, there's Tennis Channel running. They wanted Andy Murray. Let's get this on. Let's get the show on the road kind of thing. And that's where I felt like a number.
What's interesting is I think my knowledge of Andy and the way he's talked about this situation, I think he's obviously been incredibly complimentary. You guys did the little feature with the Winston-Salem Open, their social media teams. And he's just one of the – I mean, like, he's been such a proponent, too, of the lower-ranked players getting opportunities.
He's
and,
just bewildered.
And having – yeah, right. But so what was the interaction like with Andy itself, I guess, before and after?
Before, it's not much. I mean, before, this is a guy – who has a journey of his own to be on. And for him, you know, there's enough questions going on. I mean, you know, I think a lot of people already knew just from how, from the lack of seeing Nick on site, that this was kind of bound to happen a little bit. So I know Murray was kind of out there looking, but not really knowing who he was going to play next. And then once he kind of saw me getting ready and, you know, he was getting ready himself. So like prior to it, I think in his head, he's like, what in the world? Like, this kid's about to go on court again. But, you know, you get on court and, you know, it's still Murray kind of talking to his box a little bit. I'm like, Andy, I think you're going to be okay. You're going to be fucking okay. Like, yeah, I ripped a few winners and it was all good. And Jamie sent me a Snapchat of the commentator saying, great shot. Not sure how many he has left in him. And that's how it felt. It was like, let's put this on. So like when Andy was still doing a little bit of the looking over, I was like, you're going to be fine. I promise. But
So what was it like right afterwards? What were the words exchanged at the net?
Yeah. You know, he asked me, you know, are you cramping, everything okay? I said, yeah, a little bit at the end. You know, I couldn't push off at all in my calves. And I just wanted to say – and I said, you know, thank you for everything you do for this sport. It means more than you know. And I just wanted him to know that, you know, the stuff that he does doesn't go unnoticed, and he is a proponent. And, you know, a lot of the antics that you see from him on the court, you know, for the people that most people know his off-court personality and who he is and through the documentary as well. But, it's understated what he does and his voice. So wanted him to know that. And as a little bit of a counterpuncher myself, he's always been an idol looking up to. So just to be on the court with him, you know, is amazing, of course, but what a fucking story, man. What I felt like I got hit by a little bit of a small bus the next day. But
in hindsight, what would you wish you would have done in that moment? Here, and I should also say I would be fascinated to know if we had Andy on right now, if you would have said to him, I need till 8:30, what he would have said.
Him personally. Yeah.
It would be unfair to have put him in that situation, right? That's but I think he would have probably been
He would have been fine okay with at least eight. I mean, we went on if he said 8:15, I mean, I'm sure he would have. I don't think it was him.
I don't think it was either.
I'm saying obviously it wasn't him at all. But I think in my case, I would have liked to get on a call with somebody and just say, hey, like, what do I have right now? Do I have the ability to push this an hour, or are you guys are literally saying that I have to be on this? Because, again, looking back.
It's not good for your body. It's not good for the safety and health of your body.
I would do it again.
To be out there that quick.
I would do it again. Yeah. I would do it again. It was obviously there are some physical issues that I was scared about. I was like, my arm was dying, which is something I've had a problem with. And I was like, do I risk that? But of course I'm risking it. My thing is like, I have an hour. Like in my head, of course I have an hour. Like why am I not forcing another half hour of rest to get, you know, a chicken bowl in me to make sure like thing. Like that's the stuff that you look back and you're like, so much was happening all at once. I couldn't, you know, actually process the information being given to me. So, you know, those are the things that are tough. But again, the final thing on that is I felt like a number. I didn't know where to turn to. I didn't know who to turn to. And they just wanted, they just wanted their show to go on. And that's what I felt with the ATP. So, you know, they could say what they want. They could say they gave me an opportunity, but I knew, again, on top of this, I knew I was not getting paid. For people thinking I knew I was going to get – I knew I wasn't going to get paid for this match. So with the thought of not winning the match, I knew I was not going to win the match. And with the thought of understanding I was not going to get paid, there were other things going into this. The understanding that I'm home, the understanding that people have waited, wanted to see Murray, fine with seeing Noah Rubin as well out there. And there's a lot going on, you know – I think there has to be an understanding that there should be a little help there, you know, a little help.
Yeah, and there, you and Dustin Brown have been debating a little bit throughout the day, last couple days, about whether lucky losers should be paid or not. Mm-hmm. Basically, they put in a rule a couple of years ago to allow the first, or if you pull out last second like that, if you do it on site, you still get to take the first round money, even though you have pulled out.
Twice a year.
And that's done twice a year. You get two times a year. And that's done because of the fact there were way too many people who would go out completely injured, just, you know, run around for half an hour and collect a paycheck. It looked awful on the court. And that's why they did that a couple years ago. But your situation is just so incredibly unique, Noah. And I just don't know if there's, I mean, there's no precedent for it that you had to go in 30 minutes. Like, that's one right. where.
No, and I didn't want to use mine as the example. I told him that.
Right.
It's, I don't fully agree with the rule. People are saying that even with 50%, they'd go out there and play. I agree at the Grand Slam level, that money is good enough. I don't think a lot of the players would risk it for $2,000 necessarily. And I think it's you know, aided a lot of players to do some of these antics that we've seen Nick do, you know, a few times this year now, and some of these other players have done, where, you know, you think they're playing, they'll take the money, they move on and go to the next event. And, you know, I don't – either way, there's no understanding. But in this case scenario, like, I feel like – you're telling me I have a chance, and I understand with the scheduling I didn't feel like I had one. But there's no win. You lose that match, you don't get points, you don't get money, you don't get anything. And like I said, I was being monetized in a way, and I wasn't getting any piece of that. So the show went on for them. You know, the fans got the tournament, got their money for the tickets. You had Tennis Channel getting their, you know, views. And, you know, it's cool. I got an extra 500 likes on Instagram, but that's not going to, you know, pay my rent next month.
I did not – I got to be honest. I didn't – we've even talked in the – you know, texted the last couple of days. I didn't anticipate you coming in firing today.
it's good. I got treatments today. I'm feeling a little better. I'm back in New York. Honestly, I am disappointed not to be at the Open. Speaking to a lot of the people with Chris Eubank, spoke to him. He tried to get me out to dinner last night. That was impossible. Speaking to Jamie Loeb, who I believe is going on in a match or two.
She won earlier, her first round earlier.
Okay. Well, there you go.
6-4 in the third.
So, you know, talking to people, and, you know, I am disheartened not to be there right now. It does hurt. It does hurt not to be on site and disappointed. And, you know, to see that there's four alternates and the fact that I played an event this week, you know, I'm not eligible to take one of those alternate spots into the qualifying and to lose out of more money and stuff. It hurts. That's all I can say. And sucks for the players not to have fans on site, you know, as well. I mean, to see that for another year is tough. I think it was kind of a bullshit answer by USTA to say that, you know, they don't want to have fans out here for the pandemic, while, you know, next week while they're making money, it should be fine. But at the same time, USTA actually did, for the first time, probably the best dispersion. That's not a word, is it? Is it?
Disbursement in this case.
Of prize money that I think we've seen in a long time. You know, taking away from the winter finalists and bringing it down to the qualifying, I think percentage-wise, I think they said it was the highest prize money ever in a slam. On top of it, you know, to spread it out, to have 20K for the first round is great. So, you know, I think there's wins and losses there. I think, you know, some players might actually say they'd rather play in front of no fans and have more money. So it's like a kind of a give and take. I don't like the excuse that USTA made, because they are going to have full fans next week. There's going to be 1,000 players in the player lounge, you know, indoors. So it's all the same. But again, you know, they did with the prize money. So excited for them. Disappointed I couldn't be there. But we have tournaments coming up, actually. You know, we have Cary that grinded to put another one on the schedule, which is absolutely incredible. I don't know how they do it again and again with very little help. And, you know, and I'm going to be there, which I'm excited to kind of push some of this momentum forward. And, you know, anything less than playing Andy Murray a second match has to be pretty fucking easy, right? Looking at the schedule going forward, I think people are a little bit confused. We know the Asian swing is canceled. I think people are looking, do we go to Europe? Are we spending time there? What does it look like? U.S. does have that new 250 in San Diego.
So, right before Indian Wells.
So I think, you know, some of these guys are saying, hey, do I play a challenger before, you know, the San Diego tournament and then Indian Wells? Is that the best play so I don't have to go to Europe and back? So I think some of these acceptance lists are going to be very, very strange. But again, I'm just excited to be in a good frame of mind. I know you see a difference in me of how I've been on the course. Yeah. So it's, you know, taking away all the bullshit and nonsense that's gone on the past week and a half. And yeah, some got short end of the stick, but as Mike likes to say, I am short, so I deserve it.
True.
But I'm just, yeah, tennis is here. I'm playing, and that's all I can say.
All right. Well, thanks for telling us the oral history of the Andy Murray match.
I can't believe we brought that back. We took that out of the initial one. I don't like when you say oral history and you look me in the eyes.
It's fine. I was looking down that time.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, I'll see you when I see you.
Disappointing. You won't be in Cary.
I'll be like 30 minutes away. I'll be 30 minutes away for 2 weeks.
Yeah. And
at any point, if you want
to. We'll get dinner in the city.
I'm not going to the city. When am I going to have time to go to the city? I got to work. You can come over to Queens.
I'll come to Queens. Yeah, that's fine. We'll get some
nice. Yeah, there's some great food.
Korean barbecue. Ooh.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
I've been really trying to get some good bulgogi lately.
Oh, and then galbi.
I made some bulgogi.
You're too white to say that.
No, it was great. My daughter loves the bulgogi.
It's delicious. I'm a more of a galbi guy, but okay. It's all good. We'll enjoy.
I'm a gulbis guy.
Well, I wish everybody the best of luck at the US Open qualies. And Mike, I really do hope you enjoy it because you've been having a good run recently. I'm excited for you. You've been in a good place. Since he was fun, it was good seeing you out there. And yeah, that's really it.
By the way, just one thing from Cincy. Riley Opelka equals Lil Dicky.
I'm sorry, what?
Riley Opelka in his current state
looks or equals acts like
Lil Dicky.
That's not great.
So I think it's fantastic. All right. Thanks for listening, and you know, I'll be in New York soon, and we'll try to do a podcast while we're there. Bye.
The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoahRubin33, at MikeCTennis, and at Behind the Racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday, and don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us expand and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.